My name is Adrian. I'm from Romania, and I want to make a movie with you. I saw you in Dark Knight Rises, and you're my actress. This is a film I'm making right now to convince you to come here and make that movie with me. I even convinced 3 Romanian actresses to play in this film to show you how I'm gonna work with you on Be My Cat.
The actress needs to be skinny.
And I'm not skinny enough for you.
No.
Don't touch me!
They don't know. I lied to them.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Real Talk, a movie podcast, where we want to be your go-to source for ratings and recommendations of past and present films. I am your host, Wes Jones, podcasting from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Hey, this is Tommy, podcasting straight from Nashville, Tennessee.
The Movie Buddy Conway, podcasting from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Hey, Real Talk community. Wes Jones here, and the episode you're about to listen to is part one of our two-part interview with writer, director, and actor Adrian Toffay. And for those of you who are interested in filmmaking, the behind-the-scenes process, and the psychology of story creation, you're going to love this interview. We recorded a little over 2 hours with Adrian and felt the interview would be served best in two parts. Enjoy. Real Talk community, we are back from vacation, and we didn't come back empty-handed. We have such a treat for you today, and I am so, so excited for this. First, we have a special guest host, and this guy, he's one of the reasons why I wanted to become a podcaster. I love the show so much, and so interesting listening to him. And I was like, he's kind of inspired me to do this. I think I can do this. But he is currently the host of Considering the Cinema. It's a mostly solo cast about movies, which you've probably heard our promo we did for his show on previous episodes of our show. But he's also the host of Horror Movie Weekly. That's right. We've got Jason Piles, a.k.a. Jay of the Dead, with us today. Jay, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Wes. It's great to be here. I'm honored to be on Real Talk. Yeah, I love what you guys are doing with your show. I was telling you before we started recording, you and Tommy and Gabe, there's a great feel of just three buddies talking about movies. I dig it.
I'm excited to get your audience and force your audience to listen to our show now.
That's right. Yeah, I'm going to make sure I tell them to come over here and check this out for sure. Thank you.
Well, Jay, will you tell us a little bit about you were the former host of Horror Movie Podcast, which really is the first podcast that I started listening to, and now you're doing a couple of new shows. So tell our audience a little bit about your shows.
Yeah, thank you. So Considering the Cinema is just, it's a podcast for film nerds. I'm pretty obsessed with movies, and like most of you, I bet, listening out here. So we cover like new releases on there. I have guest appearances. And I love genre films, especially anything that's dark or disturbing. Like, I love crime and horror movies. And so that's what that one is, Considering the Cinema. I do horror about half the time. And because I'm a horror guy, I also do Horror Movie Weekly. And it's just a weekly show. And we just cover one horror movie every single Sunday. And it's usually a newer film within the past 5 years. And we have a blast. It's Bill Shetty and Lady Phantom are my co-hosts over there. And we mostly bicker the whole time, and it's pretty fun. So it's a good time.
Well, I can tell our audience that I listen to both shows, you know, whenever I can, and I enjoy both of them. Again, like I said, I just enjoy listening to Jay and his insights, but then I also like when he goes over and argues with Lady Phantom and Bill Shetty. It gave me a good laugh. Jay, I was actually on my drive back from vacation, I was listening to Horror Movie Weekly's Upgrade episode. And that was a really good episode. I really enjoyed it. But the next time you're recording an episode, tell Lady Phantom that you stopped by Real Talk, a movie podcast, and they definitely saw some superhero tropes in Upgrade.
Thank you. I will. She won't listen. You know, she won't listen to me, but I'll try to tell her. Yes.
Okay.
Well, there's a reason why we wanted to ask Jay to help us with tonight's show. And a couple of years ago, I was listening to Horror Movie Podcast, like we established. Jay used to be the host of that show. And he was talking about an indie horror film called Be My Cat, A Film for Anne, written, directed, produced, and acted in by Adrian Tofay. And just the way Jay was describing that movie, I was like, I've got to check this thing out. And so I did. Watched it with a group of friends, and we all loved it. It truly, and I'm being genuine when I say this, it's one of the most unique films that I've ever seen. And because Jay turned us on to that movie, we invited him to join us today as we talk with writer, director, and actor, Mr. Adrian Tofay. Adrian, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and what an interesting and union now. First Jay talking about, and now being all together here. Thank you so much, everybody, for this. really sounds like I look forward to this discussion, definitely.
Well, good deal. Well, yeah. There's so much that we want to talk with you about today, including the question that's on everybody's mind who's seen Be My Cat, which we're not going to do that right now. We're going to do a bit of a cliffhanger, and we'll talk about that just a little bit later. But the first thing we want to do is we just want to get to know you a little bit better, introduce you to our audience. So just tell us a little bit about yourself, anything at all that you just want the audience to know about you.
Well, I can't think like, what I would like the audience to know about me. I will just tell you whatever comes to my mind right now. I'm not sure if they want to know this or not. But
okay.
Where should I start? Should I start like very little? Let's start like a very short introduction, like childhood and stuff. I'm gonna try to keep things related to film, yeah. Because if I think of all my life, then it becomes too complicated. Keep it in the film area. I grew up in post-revolutionary Romania. I was born in 1987, and in 1989, when I was 2 years old, we had the revolution, or whatever, the so-called revolution, where the communism fell, and there was this transition period in the 90s in Romania with lots of scarcity, very hard living and stuff like that. Like, I remember my mom saying, we didn't have money for bread and stuff like that. So it was, now looking back, looking at the child that I was back then, I feel like sorry, feeling like, oh my God, what times, I grew up as a child. But back then it didn't feel like that, as a child, you just think it's normal and, that's it. Okay, so the good part of this was that they started to, because back in the days in communist time, there was only one single channel, and they were showing they were not showing movies on TV that much, before. They were showing movies in theater. So in the 90s was the first time when they introduced more channels, and they started to show all kinds of films, including films that they wouldn't show in the period before in communist times, films that were more like darker, more like pushing the limits, more, I don't know, like horror, things like that, So I remember, definitely when I was like a child and going towards teenager, I was definitely impressed by these things that I shouldn't have watched probably as a child, and there was, because there was that was the beginning of cable TV in Romania, literally in the 90s, there weren't such strict regulations initially in the first years in terms of saying like, this is not allowed below 18, or being shown
after midnight, or in the first years, they actually showed those horror films that were only for adults. They were showing them at 8 p.m. and without any warning or anything. And I just ended up seeing either scenes, if not the whole movies, either scenes or even the whole movies and stuff like that. And sometimes even with my mom and stuff like that. So there was, I think definitely that created a certain circumstances for me to be closer to film, and also my mom's passion for cinema. I mean, she had this back in the days when in communist Romania, you know, there was no like movies on TV or stuff, but there were a lot of movies, even Western productions, of course, not with questionable material that was material that was deemed acceptable. I mean, nothing political and stuff like Western, John Wayne stuff, you know, stuff like that. So she grew up like she crazy about all these great Hollywood actors. She even had these magazines and collecting pictures of her favorite American actors or whatever. So I think when I, as a child, I was kind of, not directly, she didn't say, oh, go watch movies, do a career in film. But I think indirectly, because she talked about, I think indirectly I was encouraged, you know, to watch movies, you know, to get closer to the world of film, you know. And still I was watching them, but not, I was not aware that, oh, like I'm in touch. Probably it was like a kind of an entertainment. I was not aware that, oh, when I'm watching a movie, I'm in touch with a piece of art. You know, there is this a wonderful thing, experience, whatever. And the first time when I felt that was like, I remember I was like changing some channels, you know, on this old TV. And at some point, was kind of late, and at some point I saw a scene from which later I learned it was from 2001, A Space Odyssey, you know, either the monkey scene or something else. I saw that scene, and oh my God, I remember like almost like the hair on my back going up, and like, oh my God, that was one of the biggest revelations of my life, me seeing that scene. And from that moment on, I like everything, all my understanding of art and films and the world, everything started to shift, and like my interest started to be so much in this direction, you know. And and I started to read about film. I didn't have a internet or computer at home later. I mean, in my early, as a teenager, I didn't have a computer or internet or stuff like that. And I remember after, actually, this happened when? This happened during high school period. Mm-hmm. So I remember every time after I had this experience with 2001 A Space Odyssey, I remember going, first of all, actually, sorry, there was something else before, I just wanted to tell you. Anyway, so when I discovered this, I started to buy some TV guides, and those guys were rating movies there from 1 to 5 stars, you know, mm-hmm. and they were saying that the 5 stars are masterpieces. Oh, and yeah. I started to watch those ones that were rated like 4 and 5 stars, and I realized, little by little, I realized that there is a connection between the movies that were really deep and I really had something to learn from, you know. They were rated 5 stars. Wow. This is, and the other ones that were like, I don't know, just the general action movie. It was like the Jean-Claude Van Damme kicking some evil guys, nothing realistic, you know, just whatever. And they were rated like 1 star, 2 stars, you know. And little by little, I started to buy that guide, and I was waiting to watch the masterpieces, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was like, because I didn't have internet, computer, and the theater in the 90s when I grew up, or even after, in like, it was like back in communist times, we had a lot of theaters. When communism fell, they were extremely mismanaged, and instead of going private and stuff like that, they were totally left to be destroyed. And at some point in Romania, we were left with almost no theaters, literally. So the only way to watch something was to wait for TV to show a movie, actually, especially in the 90s. So I was taking that TV guide and constantly waiting. Hopefully they will... hopefully I will catch those films. And then I tried to learn, okay, how do they do? How do they give these stars and stuff? And I wrote a mail to the to the publication and asked, how do they rate these movies? And they said, oh, there is actually a website called allmovie.com. Okay, a website, cool. And I didn't know much, I think, at that point about internet and stuff like that. So I went to a foundation in my local city that was offering computer access and internet for free to whoever have needed it, especially teenagers, kids, stuff like that. So I remember during my high school period, I whenever I was finishing the classes, instead of going home or I don't know, like spending time by myself or with friends or anything like that, I used to rush to go to that internet. I used to spend hours every day, literally till evening. And this happened for years, like my spare time, like I didn't have like friends going out, nothing. Like literally after that, going to that foundation and reading about film history on allmovie.com, you know, and taking notes about all the directors, all the masterpieces. Oh my God, the passion, unbelievable. And after that, I was taking notes, and then I was like waiting and praying that they will show on TV the movies that I was reading about, you know. So it was it was an exciting period, I would say. You know, I was living into this world of mine, kind of, I think, disconnected from the reality that was, I don't know, political, social problems, whatever. I was in this world of movies. So, yeah, that's kind of me. Yeah, the beginnings of me with film, in connection to film. Yeah.
Hey, Wes, we should have known that it was Stanley Kubrick who gave us Adrian. That makes all kinds of sense.
I had actually read that somewhere, that he had watched it at a young age and it really inspired him. And I was actually going to ask you about that. So you've already answered that question. And the other question that I had, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that your mother has always been extremely supportive of your love for cinema. And so can you talk a little bit about the impact that she's had on your career up to this point?
Well, definitely. I already said a little bit, like, I don't know, like, I remember being kind of encouraged initially to watch some movies immediately in the 90s when they started to show some films on TV. I remember seeing a scene from Psycho because of my mom, like, but she did not expect the movie to be what it is, you know. She just knew Anthony Perkins from some romantic comedies, you know. And when she heard, oh, look, this Cinematheque, it was called, you know, showing old movies in her opinion were like those, I don't know, Casablanca, that's old classical movies. Or when they show an old classical movie and you're, oh, let's watch, you know. And I think she was kind of shocked by the type of that movie, because of course when it actually happened in the 60s we were, I think, not informed of it happening in Romania. So yeah, I remember, yeah, one of the scene from that movie, and I have all kinds of flashes and stuff, and other films that I watched together with my mom. And later I think she had an influence with me with acting, because I remember during high school there was a guy that came to us to the school. He was going to multiple cities across Romania to give acting lessons to children, stuff like that, children, teenagers, stuff like that.
So I was interested in that acting class, and I told my mom, and she was very supportive. I mean, there was a price to pay for those classes, and it was a lot of money for us, you know, because she had only very little money. It was a very complicated social period in Romania's history. So she was very supportive of those acting classes. I think she wanted me somehow subconsciously, if she wasn't fully aware, I think she would have loved me to be like one of those stars that she was passionate when she was when she was watching movies, those Hollywood stars, something like that. So yeah, I would, she encouraged me to take those acting classes. Also because I think I was kind of shy, with not very good social skills, you know, with interact with people and stuff like that. So she thought that studying acting would develop my personality and with my social skills and stuff like that. If I studied, like, that would be another reason, I think. Yeah. So I did those classes. Now looking back, those classes were like total bullshit. Like, like the worst. It's like, had nothing to do with acting anyway, but it's still for me as a beginning, you know, like being pushed, like making the first steps into like igniting my interest at least for this, that it was good, you know, for that it was good. And after that, yeah, after that, I was also supported to go to an acting school, you know, or even to study film. But unfortunately, I failed. I didn't enter the film school, and I even failed to enter the acting school, the big acting school in Bucharest and stuff like that. But that's a school that is horrible. It's like oh my god, like everything is about teachers being paid and bribery, like horrible, most of the kids that. Back in the day, I think to a certain extent it happens today. I'm not sure to what extent, but when I was back then, you know, like there were some teachers in the committee, and it depended on those teachers if you are admitted to acting or film school or not. And most of the kids that were admitted, they were the ones who did preparation with the actual teachers from the committee. So if you want to get admitted, you pay huge money to do private classes with the teachers in the committee, which I didn't have those money. I also was very idealistic, and even if I had the money, I wouldn't pay for that, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I always hated these things, you know, and that's and that I even went to extremes with my movie, you know, with Be My Cat, you know. At some point there was a guy who I went to extremes. I shouldn't have done that, but I hated so much this festival industry, because I thought it's something pure. I thought you make a film, you pay the submission fee, you know, and somebody watches and you have a chance to enter to Sundance, to all these things. But little by little, I learned that, hey, actually, most of the movies that are most of the submissions, the paid submissions fees, nobody cares about them. And actually, festivals select films from sales agents, from distributors, and stuff like that. So practically, we, the little ones that barely make some little money and struggle to submit a film, we are paying the screening fees for other big movies, which are actually invited, you know. And mm-hmm. Yeah, so I got so much disappointed. I hated this thing that happened in the. At some point, I got invited in a way, in the same way, by a festival. It was a festival in Italy. And somebody said, "Oh, like I know the director of the festival, and I would really like to recommend your movie, Be My Cat, to him." And because I hated so much this thing, you know, like the idea of somebody submitting, and then the people that submit, they do not get selected. They get selected other people who have connections, who know somebody, and stuff like that. I hated that, so I didn't want to do in my mind back then to other filmmakers what other festivals were doing to me, you know? Yeah. So I said, no, don't talk to him. I don't want that. So I literally passed an opportunity for my cat to be in that festival. I said, no, I will just submit the regular way, you know? I was so idealistic and naive, you know, because I thought that this can still be changed. And later, you know, after a while, I learned that It's like 99% it happens that way, you know. And right now, I even have a on my website. I put I have a list of film festivals and with submission tips to indie filmmakers. You know, I really trying to help people and to make them understand that paying huge money to submit to festivals, it's need to be very careful if you decide to pay to submit to a festival, because most probably those money you just throw away for nothing, you know. It's a very ugly this business, actually.
So at this point, Adrian has given us quite a bit of information about growing up and things. Do you guys have any follow-up questions, anything that stuck out to you that you wanted us to dive in a little bit further?
Yeah, Wes, thanks. Appreciate it. Adrian, thank you so much for joining us on our podcast today. One thing I wanted to mention, because I know you kind of mentioned the film festival process, I noticed that you had your film submitted to the Nashville Film Festival. And I live in Nashville, so I just wanted to kind of get your feedback on that and make sure I was right on that, because I saw that on Wikipedia where I think you won an award from that film festival.
Yes.
So any experience in that film festival that you can speak through?
Oh, Nashville Film Festival was the guy that my film was selected in the I forgot how it's called exactly. It was a section for genre films, you know, kind of a midnight section, something like that. Something graveyard shift.
Yeah, the graveyard shift. Yeah, which is like their midnight release film festival. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So the guy that programs that midnight shift, he's a guy that is really, really passionate and really about discovery, you know. And I was kind of lucky to submit. It was a blind submission, you know. I knew nobody in the festival. I didn't come, like, just pure submission. You know? The guy just selected my film. And then after that, I read more about the guy who actually did the selection. He gave me even an interview. And he's, like, such a passionate indie guy that literally wants to discover those hidden gems out there, you know. Mm-hmm. And I even recommend it to other people as well. Like, hey, like, if you are like indie and you don't have connections, you don't have that, like it is worth paying to submit to Nashville in the genre section. I don't know anything else about the other sections because they are programmed by other people, but in the midnight shift, if it's still the same guy, you know for sure that your money don't go to waste if you pay to Nashville.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that about the Nashville Film Festival, because it is a really good film festival,
yes,
I think.
Yes, I did. I didn't, because you asked me about the feedback. I did not attend the festival, and I did not think that I would win anything, literally. So if I knew, like, literally, there was the director of the one of the directors, the woman director, that found footage anthology, VHS, Benjamin, mm-hmm. Benjamin something, Roxanne Benjamin, I think. Anyway, one of the directors of VHS, and I mean, there were these important names in the committee, literally, that gave me the award. So if I knew that I would be appreciated by these top people in the industry, oh my God, I would have done everything to be present in that festival, you know, because I could have made some connections with these people. And I just thought, like, it's a secondary midnight shift, probably nothing will come out of it. And I didn't have money at the point, would be very expensive to go to US. So I didn't, I regret the most. That's the thing I regret the most about BMIC, I'm not going to Nashville. Yeah.
Well, still great that you won. That was really exciting.
Yeah.
Jay, you have anything for him?
Oh, absolutely. I think Gabe, were you talking? Did you have your? I didn't want to talk over Gabe. Yes, actually, Adrian, I just want to ask real quick. What's your all-time favorite movie and your all-time favorite horror movie?
Good question.
All-time favorite. That's a good question, but indeed, my answer is going to, I don't know. It's a complicated answer. I have, like, I mean,
There are films that I liked, let's say, there are films that kind of impressed me or influenced me in the past, but today they don't necessarily impress or influence me anymore, you know? Like films that left a mark, like the, for example, 2001 Space Odyssey, you know? Yeah. Or the Blair Witch Project, which influenced me so much, okay? And now I wouldn't say that, oh, I'm crazy about that film or it's my favorite film, you know? There are other films that I considered them to be important or good, but not necessarily touching me, you know? There are other films that I consider to be, I don't know, like... there are films that I can say they touch me in a way, like, but at the same time, when I look at it objectively, I realize it's not such a good film. I don't know. It's so hard for me. I think I become too mental, too much analytical about these things. It's hard to name. It's so hard. It's impossible, literally, for me to name a favorite. Yeah, I can tell you this. So the movie that kind of influenced me the most were kind of the Blair Witch Project and 2001 Space Odyssey, and I would say Carrie when I was like a child, you know, like, because I also had problems with bullying and all that. So I think I really empathize with the girl killing the bullies in Carrie in the prom scene. And Carrie also influenced me in terms of the paradoxical character, you know, this. Like, she is this very innocent person that becomes this with a very huge power, this destructive power, you know? The characters that I did in theater, also in Be My Cat, and also I'm also looking for this type of paradox, you know? Like, very light, you can see my character in Be My Cat, he's smiling all the time, everything is nice, but he's doing these horrible things at the same time. I'm looking for this contrast, for this paradox. So yeah, these are the films that impressed and influenced me the most. And something else, a film that I would recommend the most. I cannot say that it's my favorite film, neither that it's a film that it influenced and impressed and influenced me a lot, but a film that I would recommend a lot to others would be a documentary and would be The Untold History of the United States. And I would recommend that one simply for an eye-opening perspective of the world and that from a political point of view, you know? And definitely also open my eyes to a lot of the issues in the world. On the other side, like a film that, let's say, that I consider to be the greatest ever made or something like that, that's hard, you know? I don't know. Maybe Chaplin's films. You know, but for example, I look at The Gold Rush. It looks like a perfect film, literally. I can't find any issue with it. But it didn't leave a mark on me personally. Like in my career, there is nothing that I took from that movie. You know, but when I look at it objectively, I just see it like the perfect film. You know, The Gold Rush. So there are different categories of favorite films for me. Yeah, that's the long answer, and there is no short answer.
Well, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you, Gabe. Yeah.
All right, good. I fixed my Canon yarn that I podcast through, so you guys can hear me now. I really liked your story, Adrian, about like how you came to appreciate film, how you used to watch those films late at night on TV. I had a similar experience. I used to watch horror movies late at night on TV. I snuck in at 8 and watched The Shining, and it terrified me for life. And then later in life, Wes and Tommy here tried to force me to watch it in a chair in our apartment when we were in college, and I didn't want to watch it because it had frightened me so much as a kid. But I had a quick question. Is that your actual mother in the film?
Yes. She's my mom.
I thought so. I thought that was actually her early on in the film. And then the other question is, how much of your personality is in the actual acting of the character in the movie? How much of that is you?
Well, um, I would say very little, extremely little. Everybody thinks that I might be, I would say, because the character was like developed in a very long period of time. Like first it was a monologue that I did during college. It was about a guy who was killing insects and killed his sister's cat and then kidnapped a girl, something like that. So it had something to do with cats and mentally disturbed and stuff like that. So kind of a psychopath. That monologue, I played it within a bigger show. After college, I transformed that monologue into a bigger one-man show, which I played in certain pubs in Bucharest and in other places. Went to a couple of festivals. It was called Monstrul in Romanian, which in English would be like the monster. So I played it for a couple of years, and then I kind of, the character that I played, not the story in the theater show itself, but my character, the psychology of my character in the monster kind of influenced Be My Cat and my character in Be My Cat. So practically, although you, probably you, if you some if one of you or read about some trivia or something like that, I wrote there that I lived in character like 1 year before production and stuff like that for Be My Cat. But actually the living in character could be said that it was like 5 years before, because constantly playing this character in theater, in theater, you know, and constantly evolving at the same time, because I was the director, producer, writer, so I was also evolving it while playing it. So it was developed over a long period of time. So because of that, it looks very real, because it's like a psychological reality. Like it becomes a reality in a way, you know, when you develop it for such a long period of time. It has its own life, this character, you know. So because of that, it looks so real, I think, and people think, oh, like this guy is not acting, he is himself, you know. It's just that long period of time. But no, it's not me at all, actually.
I mean, well, I was excited to finally talk to you, because your laugh is what makes you such a convincing psychopath in the movie.
Okay.
And you have that laugh.
Well, I was talking about the psychology, the actual means of expression, like the laughing and the physical means of expression, that some of them are mine. Like I didn't build them from, you know, like there are different levels of acting. First, when you assume the psychology, and then you assume some physical stuff. I assumed a very different psychology, the psychology of a psychopath, which obviously I'm not. But in terms of the physical means of expression, I kept some of my own physical means of expression. You know, I didn't create this thing, you know.
Well, so, I just used it. So Gabe is kind of transitioning us into the movie a little bit, and so let me give our audience just a little bit of information about it, and then we'll open the discussion back up and everybody just fire away with their questions on the movie. And so for our audience, if you haven't seen Be My Cat, A Film for Anne, this is the point in the show where you'll probably want to pause the interview, go watch his movie. You, right now in the U.S., I know you can watch it on Amazon Prime, you can watch it on Tubi, and then come back and finish up the episode, because we're not going to ruin the film by any means for those who haven't seen it. But in order to talk about the movie, you know, we will get into a little bit of mild spoilers. So, Be My Cat is a 2015 film that I believe Adrian shot back in 2014, and yes. it wasn't made more widely available here in the U.S. Until April 27th of 2018 on VOD, and so that's basically a three-year delay from the time that the movie was first made available until it really became more widely available in the U.S. But it's a psychological horror film. And it's an excellent example of meta cinema, and that's just basically where the movie tells the audience that they're watching fiction. And so I want to read the description that's actually listed on your website, Adrian, and that's okay. adriantofay.com, and it says, Adrian, director, directed, produced, wrote, and starred in Romania's first found footage horror feature, Be My Cat, a film for Anne. The movie went on to numerous festivals, won multiple awards, is critically acclaimed, including Best Film at a Night of Horror Film Festival in Sydney, Best Actor for Adrian at the Nashville Film Festival, which T-Man was talking about earlier. It was called Terrifying by Austin Chronicle, and a new intelligent found footage film you need to see by Blumhouse. And it got listed by Dread Central in the top five best horror movies of 2016. And as we've been advertising on our social media stuff, it currently has an 83% on Rotten Tomatoes. And so Adrian's already talked a little bit about how he came up with the character and the concept. But what I was curious in to kick it off is just walk us through how you were able to get this made into a feature-length film, you know, getting the funding, the distribution of it, casting the actresses, stuff like that. Tell us how the movie really kind of came together and got it out there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so... Well, first of all, because when we are talking about indie, anything indie, you know, like people passionate about indie filmmaking, indie films and stuff like that, I'm always thinking that there is a future filmmaker out there who might be inspired to do his own indie film, you know, listening to us and stuff like that, you know. So I would like to also talk from that perspective as well, you know. So the thing is this, like, I knew nothing, zero about filmmaking. Like, and I think it's good, actually, because I know some other students that studied filmmaking in the official school, you know, National University of Theater and Film for Bucharest. They, after finishing 3 or 4 years, they are totally paralyzed. They are afraid to make anything, you know, because they are being brainwashed by these teachers that, oh, in order to make a feature, you need to first make a short to gain experience. In order to make this, you need the money, you need the camera, you need the crew, you need the state funding, you need this, you need this, you need this. When you go to the internet to see how to make a movie, you see those websites with huge lists, like to do this, 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 this. And when you look at all those things, you get you get scared, you know, like there's no way I how do I get the money for this education, to learn how to use a camera, to learn how this, and in my opinion, the best way to start doing a film is to ignore all the advices, like everything just unless it helps you. I mean, if you actually read that and you feel empowered, then okay, go and read this thing. If you feel like I'm gonna make the New York film school, and then I'm gonna make if you can do that, okay. But if you feel scared by those things, don't listen to any of them, because you actually don't need anything to make a film. Like in the beginning, literally nothing. Like it can be made literally. I can take right now this phone, and I'm not saying that in order to, I don't know, to show myself like, oh, look what I can do. Because I think actually anybody can do that, you know? You can literally take right now your phone and start recording something and improvising, see where that story goes, and then build upon it. And at the end, you look at the footage you shot, literally, and you think, okay, how can, let's say you shot like in all those improvisation, you play around your house with your friends, something. And then you look at all those, let's say, 5 hours of footage. Okay, how can I edit this into a, I don't know, 15 minutes film? Is there a way to take some best moments? You know, maybe I'm not even an actor. Maybe I'm an amateur. But in a lot of hours of footage, you definitely will find some good moments. You know, it's impossible that everything is shit. You know, like shoot as much as possible, play with it. You know. And you will find some good moment that you can put together to create a story. So practically, and in terms of budget and all these things, I had no idea as well. Like I just found my ways. First, I did okay. How do I get the money? I need a camera. By the way, before shooting Be My Cat, I never had a camera in my life. First time I used the camera
in character shooting Be My Cat, literally.
Oh, my.
It's like crazy. I like because I thought, you know what? I thought it's realistic this way. Because I thought, just a second, I'm doing found footage. Found footage needs to be real, you know? If it's not real, it doesn't work, okay? So if it's shot, if this guy says he made an Indiegogo campaign, he actually says that, and he bought the camera and this in order to shoot that film for N, okay? If he says that, then it's totally okay. Me, although I have no experience in using a camera, it's actually not okay. It's desirable that I do not get experience of using the camera before shooting the film. You know, it's actually desirable because that's how this is the actual process that my character goes through, you know? So then it will be realistic and then it will make sense. So I just trusted this. I just trusted this concept, you know, to the idea of trying to recreate the psychological process and the circumstances that this guy is actually put into, you know. And that's why I even moved to my mom, you know. It's like he's like a loner, lives with his mom. I even moved from Bucharest to my mom, like didn't socialize at all. I stayed in my room like literally 4 months, stuff like that. Like I tried to put myself a little bit into his way of living and stuff like that. And what else did I do about this? Oh yeah, and about Anne, you know, like during improvisations, like I didn't think of technical stuff, like, or how do I hold the camera, or stuff like that. My only goal was to convince Anne to come to Vredeuți, Romania, to that place, you know, like I assumed the psychology of my character. And I was actually trying with whatever I was doing to convince Anne, like for real, you know, while acting. So a lot of the things that happen in the film are literally the main drive behind this was my intention and my efforts to actually convince Anne, you know. Of course, not. It had a structure in advance. I had some points that I had to reach. So it was not totally improvisation. I'm just starting and, okay, let's see how to convince Anne. It has some points that I had to reach, okay, the casting and everything. So now I'm going to go to the actors a little bit. Oh, actually, first, the budget. The budget was the biggest challenge, I would say, initially. I first did an Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign. It drew very little money. And then I did another one, and I got a little bit more with the second one. And then I literally went to Facebook and I put on horror groups. I said, look, I did this horror theater show called The Monster. I put images from the show, videos, you know, me acting. I said, hey, I want to make this film, you know, the concept and all that. And I found somebody who was willing to invest some money that was like so essential for me back then. I think it was $1,500. You know, and that money was I think was and also I found somebody else as well, you know. So little by little I managed to buy a camera and a laptop, and that was all I needed at that point, like a laptop that I can edit the film and a camera to shoot the film. And and then I put announcements for the actresses. I explained to them that it's a super indie production. I can't pay them and stuff like that other than offering them some food and housing, you know. In the, they stayed in the actual pension where the guy says he's killing them. So that's how I found the actresses. And it was this thing like we met directly, like when they arrive at the location and they record, that's when I actually met the actresses for the first time. I met the actresses in character. That was something planned. It was a language. We had this language switch, you know. We had a lot of preparation, psychological preparation via email in advance. One of the rules was like, okay, when you hear me speaking Romanian, it's me, Adrian, the director, you, the actress, for real. When you hear me speaking English, that means we make the psychological switch. That means that it's me, the psychopathic director, and you are the actress played by yourself. So the language switch was in order to both help the acting, to know exactly when we are acting and we are not, and also to help us from not going crazy during the production. To like,
wait a minute, right here, Adrian. You convinced women actresses to stay in a hotel room that you were going to pretend murder them in that you didn't know. You, how did you sell that? Hey, come stay in this room. I'm going to fake murder you. I don't know you. How did you convince them to do that?
Yeah, well, it was easy.
That's concerning.
I don't want to say that because it sounds like psychopaths watching to this thing. That you, oh my God, I didn't know that would be so easy. Why didn't I try so far to kill people this way?
I didn't know that would be so easy, and now all I have to do is say it's a horror movie, and I can do anything to them.
Oh my God!
teaching filmmakers and future psychopaths.
Well, I literally think to be honest, I think that actors are extremely vulnerable. To be honest, like I think the same way like they would be, you know, and actors suffer a lot. Actually, I heard a lot of things in the U.S. You know, they get scammed so much. Going to some indie production and then realizing that nothing is being made, sometimes even sexually abused. So unfortunately, they take such a leap of faith. Indie actors do for indie productions, you know, just to. And in my case, I think they got lucky, to be honest, because I could have been okay, not a psychopath, but I could have been somebody doing a totally shitty thing, you know, something that nothing would come out in the end, or so I wouldn't say that it's like, yeah, it's, I don't know what to respond to. It's actually a hard word for indie actors, you know, that want to be successful and stuff. I think you need to do your research very well. Or maybe the thing is this with me. We had this in Romania. Once you study acting and stuff like that, you kind of get so much brainwashed into theater. There is nothing else that you know after you finish the acting school other than the theater. Nobody tells you about that, the idea that you can make a film. I don't know why there is this thing. So a lot of the actors, when they finish the acting school, they all of a sudden panic, because in the acting school, everything is nice. Okay, we are actors, this, and after that, they realize nobody hires them, and there's no way to survive as an actor. And there are not enough productions being made. There are no movies being made. You need to have connections and stuff and relationships in order to get a role or something like that. It's like, oh my God, how am I going to survive? So they get together and they do these indie theater shows, you know? So they just meet at a colleague's house, you know, in their apartment, and they rehearse the theater show in the apartment. You know, it's an extremely underground effort just to make a living and to do something, you know, to do the thing that you trained for. So because of that, I think actors in Romania already have this training, you know, I don't know, like, okay, we don't have a place. Okay, we meet in my little one-room apartment. I live there with my boyfriend. No problem. Boyfriend will just sit in a corner while I rehearse. You know, he'll just lock himself in the closet while I do this thing. There is no money for food. No problem. We will eat all week. We will eat only some snacks, literally. So actors are already taught to be like these guerrilla fighters in order to survive in this business, you know, to do something for themselves, because they realize, okay, nobody's going to do anything for me. Opportunities won't come if I won't make my own opportunities. So I think this theater experience, the idea of them doing this, translated into film, you know, The actresses found it easy to make this transition into film, you know, like, okay, they are willing to do this, to just make these efforts, then why wouldn't they just go to a city, to another city, to film some underground production? You know, I mean, we are all colleagues, they knew I was an actor, I had a lot of friends on Facebook, so Romania, it's not the US, okay, it's like 20 million people, so... And the ones that are into acting
are probably also, we kind of, at that point, it was the age of Facebook. It was after the age of Facebook. And when Facebook started, we started to add each other. So usually the ones that were into acting or arts or anything, we had all of us, all each other, we had as friends and stuff like that. So if you knew that, oh, there was a guy, oh, you see, we considered as colleagues, although we didn't study in the same school, you know, because they were little acting schools. So it's not like, oh, you go in the middle of nowhere with some creepy guy saying that he's going to do that. Then, for the US, probably, yes. I understand why it would feel like that for you. It's a big country, a lot of crazy people out there. Not everybody has everybody on their Facebook list, okay, to verify. But here it was more like already, oh, this guy, oh, he's an actor, oh, he studied that, oh, he said he did that show, oh, they already felt like I'm their colleague, you know. So no such fear, I think, yes. But I need to tell you this. It was like, okay, the initial concept, and I wanted at some point to have a foreign, because I also read the instructions on those things. They say like, oh, in order to have a successful film and stuff like that, you need to have a star in your film. It's easier to sell that film if you have a star or something. And I thought like, okay, can't have a full star, but I loved the film Exhibit A. I'm not sure, it's a found footage film from 2007. And I loved the performance I forgot her name, Brittany Ashworth, I think, or Ashworth, I don't know how to pronounce her name, and an English actress, you know. So I contacted her on Twitter and saying like, I'd really love that movie and all that. I'm making a film, and I was actually thinking to bring like the idea of this guy, this character, even convincing an actress from abroad to come to Romania, you know. And I wrote to her, but without telling her exactly the concept and all that, you know, like, I would like to make a proposal. Where can I send the proposal? So she gave me the email. She gave me the email of her agent. Okay. So I'm writing to her, her agent, and I'm saying like, hey, like, this movie is about a psychopathic Romanian filmmaker who brings an actress from England to Romania thinking that she's going to be in a movie, but actually, this proves to be a fake movie and she gets killed and all that, okay? So practically, can you imagine this, like me, all of a sudden, a nobody, I'm not known as a filmmaker, nothing, you know? I am bringing this actress from England to play an actress who is being brought from England by a psychopath to Romania to shoot a film. Yes. And I wrote and I explained this thing, this meta thing, but I explained it in a professional way, okay? The agent very nicely didn't say anything bad, like very nicely said no, but initially afterwards, the actress blocked me on Twitter. Without me doing or saying anything. I understand. I understand you guys when you think like, oh, how come these actresses came to you? I understand what you think, yeah. Like, yeah.
Well, and Adrian, yeah. I think the burning question that everybody has is, since this a film within a film is a proof of concept where you're trying to persuade Anne Hathaway to come and star in your movie, everybody wonders, now that it's 5 years later, has Anne Hathaway seen this film, and has she agreed to be your cat?
Yes.
Okay, good one.
Okay, that wraps up part one of our interview with Adrian. We're sorry to leave the interview on such a cliffhanger. Well, we're actually not sorry. We made a decision to do it this way, but don't worry. We'll have part two in the conclusion of the interview in just a couple of days. Take care.